You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition, and just a quick announcement. We're still on a summer schedule for another 2 weeks, and then we're back to the regular schedule Monday to Friday, so there will not be a show this Friday or tomorrow, but after 2 weeks from now, there will be. Now, what is the story of the news? You can't miss it, whether it's on talk radio, television, you name it. It's the suicide, or was it homicide, of Jeffrey Epstein. He was the millionaire, although we're not sure precisely how he made his money. Apparently, he's not a billionaire, but he owns a lot of real estate property, and it looks like, I'd say, hundreds of millions. I'm bringing that up because with his death, many of the children, and I want to emphasize this, children that were molested by Jeffrey Epstein and some of the people working for him will never get their day in court, but in terms of criminal, because once Epstein killed himself or was murdered, I have no real opinion either one, other than apparently he is dead. We haven't seen any pictures of the body, though. Keep that in mind. I'm not trying to raise a conspiracy theory, but I haven't seen any pictures. I believe he has one living relative, a brother, but, and that brings what I thought about. Well, okay, he's dead. They have to value his estate. There's probably some trust agreements. Supposedly, Epstein was very knowledgeable about trust, or at least that's one of the reports. Remember, he didn't have a college education. A lot of new journalists are making a big deal of that. I'm not, but he did rise on Wall Street in a couple of companies, got a job in a, upscale high school, I guess is what I would call it, a prep school. Usually you need a college education. Obviously he was smart, intelligence, knew how to manipulate people. And what might surprise some people is that most people didn't know of his private life. His neighbors, whether in New York City, Florida, just didn't know anything about him. And yes, if you're engaged in this activity where you are sexually abusing, really children, what we're talking about here is anywhere from 11 years old up to 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. This was not consenting adults. And yes, he would pay them. By paying him, he's engaged in prostitution. So the press is focusing on a number of aspects. One being, well, how did he make his money? Two, why did he get such a, the first time he was prosecuted? If you listen to the reports, it looked like until the federal government stepped in, he wasn't going to be charged at all. And that might surprise you. It's not enough to accuse a person. You got to bring evidence in court. And when you have that kind of money, you get the first-rate defense team. And they would have went after any of the children that are now older. This started in the 90s. So many of these people now are in their 30s. So with his death, whether it's homicide or suicide, some of these people will have an opportunity to sue his estate to get some financial settlement out of it. But there are dozens of these. And depending on the size of the state, I'll tell you who's going to get rich off of this, the attorneys. They always seem to get their fees paid. So it's going to be a challenge by many of these young initially children, now that are young adults. And remember, you need to hire an attorney. You almost, it's not amusing. It almost could be a class action suit. So the combination is, how much money is he worth? You have many, many people that could, but they're going to have to prove it. You see, that's the thing. They can tell their story. It can be very, very persuasive, but you got to prove it. And this happened, in some cases, decades ago. You can see the dilemma here. And clearly, he's going to try to protect themselves. Now, who has most to worry about? The people that enable this. Whether you call them a co-conspirators, employees that enabled this child molester over many, many years to molest over and over and over again more and more children. What goes unanswered is, how did he get away with this? I think it goes back to evidence. You got to first, crimes have to be committed. I think crimes were committed. The difficulty is proving it. And there were very few instances, contemporary instances, where they could have had the evidence. But what does someone this rich usually do? He pays off the defendant, or the victim, is a better way to say. Ultimately, that's what he can do. He is in a position to do that. Doesn't want to do it, but I'm sure to the extent that there was evidence and these victims had it, let's say a hidden recording, there were probably a few that were paid off handsomely, in the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. But that's a drop in the bucket compared to these initial estimates. I've seen he's worth over $500 million. And it's up to his estate to protect the value of the estate. And it's up to the federal government, now the federal government, to try to make the case against the people that assisted him. That's going to be even more difficult. So will these victims ultimately get a day in court? Not a criminal court, most likely civil. But even then, it's expensive to hire lawyers to do this. I don't think it's an open and shut case. However, and this is important, you've seen the news reports. The FBI gained access to both his Manhattan apartment, worth over $70 million, and his Little St. James Island in the Virgin Islands. And supposedly they gathered a lot of evidence, photographs, DVDs. But again, unless there's a narrative, how well did he document it? It's not really in his interest to document this. Now, I understand he kept the pictures, and that is one way to establish, maybe, that he did molest certain people, to the extent you can identify from those pictures who the victims are, that if they're suing. I'm bringing all this up because we're going to be hearing about this case probably for the next 10, 15, 20 years. It would not surprise me. And when you know there's that much money, there's a strong incentive for attorneys. Some will work on contingency. I would say most would have to work on contingency because these women simply are not in a position to go up against their financial resources of the estate of Jeffrey Epstein. And then we get to the more sensational aspects of this. And that's the fact that there's strong suspicion that Epstein was providing women to very powerful, both financially, politically. It sounds like he was a trafficker. And like I say, for many of those politicians, people of power, wealth, dead child molesters tell no tales. So that gets back to how you're going to prove your case. They're obviously going to bring pressure, and I'm talking the Department of Justice, the FBI, on those associates of Epstein that assisted him. He was a sex addict. But these were not consenting adults, and that's the key point. These were not consenting adults. Now, I'm not saying there probably were some that were. But if you listen to the press reports and the YouTube videos on this, most of them were teenagers, young children. That was his preference. He was a sexual predator, a sexual molester. I lean towards suicide. I think it finally dawned on him that, unlike in the past, there was no way to really fix this. The feds this time were going to go after him, and he wasn't going to be able to talk his way out of it or buy his way out of it with first-rate legal talent. So he decided to take his life, although if you listen to his attorney, he didn't get a sense that Epstein was going to commit suicide. As a matter of fact, there's a sense that he was very optimistic that he could get off this one more time. But he's dead. You can't force the dead to testify. So that means, and in many, many cases, it's circumstantial evidence. They don't testify. So the extent that he was sloppy and kept the pictures, the evidence, hid it, well, he could hide it until the FBI broke into his, they had a search warrant. But he's, but remember, he can't fight. When you're dead, you can't fight it. There was no one fighting the search warrant. The government knows what it has, and it has a lot of evidence. The question is, does it lead anywhere? Oh, I think they'll have a few token prosecutions, but it's not clear to me they'll win them, because he did this over many, many years, and the people that is engaged in the illegal activity were poor or low-income women, or rather children is a more accurate term. Now they're women. And many, you have a range of how many cooperated with them, how many after one or two times just never came back. No one will know the extent of his sins, his crimes, but we'll talk about it and talk about it. What I find disturbing is, even though this is something that's usually closely held, this is not something the predators are not going to make it easy for anyone to go after him. I still have the sense that police, even the FBI, knew enough that they were strongly suspicious, yet nothing was done. Nothing was done. So the people in the Department of Justice, the FBI, the local police departments, as well as district attorneys, they have to ask themselves, to the extent they have a conscience, why didn't you act? Why were you not more proactive in this? I'm of the opinion this was probably a ring headed by him, and he was providing children, women, to some well-connected people. In other words, people that shared his sexual addiction to young people, namely not adults, but young people, primarily females, at least what we know so far. And that's what's really disturbing about this. There seems to be two standards, one for everybody, or nearly everybody, the rule of law. I'm a big advocate of the rule of law, and it should be applied to everyone. And then you have a separate set of rules, a separate law, a separate way to treat people that are politically well-connected and financially well-off, that they can engage in criminal activity, but because of their wealth and political connections, we have a system that is so corrupt that most of them get away with it. And that's what happened. For a good, really going on 30 years, he got away with it. Now, may not be exactly 30 years, because he didn't come from a wealthy family. But at some point, probably in his 40s, that's just my guess, he had the wealth, the connections, and continued his criminal activity. There'll be books written about it. This reminds me, as I'm sure it reminds many people, of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Do we really know who the killer was, or killers? I don't think it is as complicated, because I think the balance of the evidence, it was suicide. But why now does he decide to end his life? I think he slowly was coming to the conclusion that if he was found guilty, he was going to spend a significant amount of time in prison, and then he faced violence from the inmates in the prison. So rather than let them determine when and how they would kill him, he decided he would make that determination. And that's what he did last Saturday morning. I will periodically update if we have anything of tremendous new information here. There's just so many unanswered questions, though. And why didn't people in positions of protecting the public from this predator fail us? And I think it comes down to, you got to make a case. You can speculate all you want, but whether you're a district attorney or a U.S. attorney, you got to have the evidence. If you don't have the evidence, and what I mean by evidence, to convince a jury of his peers beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed these offenses. When you combine that with first-class legal talent and money to pay them, and the fact that many of these alleged crimes took place years ago, you can see the problem. And he almost got off. Remember, the first time, the local prosecutors were not going to prosecute him. It's only because the federal government, the Department of Justice, stepped in that he at least spent some time in prison. Not enough. And then got out. I really think he feared being brutally, violently attacked once he went through a prosecution, and he probably assumed he knew he was guilty, but he wasn't sure he hid the evidence, and he probably didn't. So stay tuned. We'll learn more. I'm frankly sick of this story. It's very depressing. And keep in mind, there are people in your community that are engaged in this activity today, and you don't know who they are, and very few ultimately get caught. Some do, but those that are smart, have the money, either never or seldom get prosecuted. Enough said. There are two other stories in the news that I want to briefly go over. One is that we have North Korea is, again, firing off, testing, short-range missiles. Supposedly solid-state, very fast missiles. Short-range, but that still means they can hit targets in South Korea and in Japan. And this is the sixth round of one or more. Usually they do these in pairs. Testing of the missiles. So it's clear to me is Chairman Kim wants to get the world's attention. See, I think he wants to do something, but he has a very big problem, and so does Donald Trump. Chairman Kim knows that the only reason he has nuclear weapons and missiles to deliver them is because of the assistance of the Communist Chinese Party. They're the ones that funded North Korea and enabled them to develop a nuclear capability, and they do. The estimates are 30 to 60 nuclear weapons. They have not perfected a long-range ballistic missile, intercontinental ballistic missile. But see, all these tests, you're getting more and more knowledge of what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. So it's simply a matter of time that North Korea develops a intercontinental ballistic missile, an ICBM, that can hit the United States. So why President Trump has not overemphasized this, as a matter of fact, I think he's playing it down, as long as they don't do nuclear test or testing of long-range missiles that can hit the United States or ally Japan, he's not going to take any action. But remember, the sanctions are still there. This is a totalitarian regime, more or less controlled by the Communist Chinese Party. They provide them the technology and the resources. They get most of their exports from Communist China. The United States, other than going to war with North Korea, whether that's conventional or nuclear, in my mind, that's the only leverage that the United States has over North Korea. In other words, if President Trump is serious, and I think he is, to try to get the North Korea to do away with its nuclear weapons as well as its long-range rockets, in other words, denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, that is the stated objective. That's going to take years, and only will happen if the Communist Chinese force, coerce, however you want to describe it, North Korea and Chairman Kim to do it. So the extent to which the United States and Communist China are not finalizing a trade deal, I don't think you're going to see any movement at all in the negotiations between the United States and North Korea. To make it very clear, until we have an enforceable trade agreement, the United States has an enforceable trade agreement with the Communist Chinese, and I'm not sure we're ever going to have one, but assuming that China is slowly negotiating in good faith. See, I'm of the opinion they're just trying to stretch this out. That's been the history of both North Korea and Communist China. Talk, even agree to something, and then come back and say, no, we decided not to do it. Now, once, and I think we're fast approaching this, Donald Trump concludes that Communist China is not negotiating in good faith. In other words, they're not really interested in coming up with a mutually agreed to and enforceable trade agreement. I don't think we're there now, but I think we're heading there, and probably at a more accelerated rate. Then what is President Trump going to do? Oh, he's going to go the tariff or protectionist route. But remember, what does Communist China mainly import? Keep that in mind. What do they mainly import? It's commodities, farm products, soybeans, for example, wheat, coal. There's a long list. They need resources, especially natural resources, as well as parts to build and grow products and grow food. And there are other sources of food in the world than the United States. Argentina immediately comes to mind. They're leaders in soy, oil production, as well as wheat. So to the extent that the Communist Chinese, instead of buying from U.S. farmers, buy from farmers in other countries, I think that's what China's going to do. And once that clearly becomes understood, then I can see the negotiations really ending. In other words, eventually If there's no agreement, and that's a big if, but if President Trump finally says, wait a minute, I'm being played for a fool, they're never going to agree to anything. Then he has to end the negotiations. Now, why am I raising this? What is the big fear right now in the Trump administration? Recession. The one thing that could defeat Donald Trump in 2020 is if the United States economy went into a recession. And I know they're worried about it. They want to put a nice face on it. The economy is growing. I agree with them. The economy is growing. It's not booming, though. Don't fall into that trap. I've heard too many people talk, well, the economy is booming. No, it's not. It's growing at roughly an average rate. It's not growing at 4, 5, 6%. And this Thursday, we'll know, get the second estimate for the second quarter. And that's an important economic report, because if it confirms that the U.S. economy is growing at 3%, that will tap down recession fears. Most economists, U.S. economists, still believe and know the economy is growing. Only a minority are saying we could get in a recession this year. More are saying the recession could be the following year. And the big unknown here that's driving the uncertainty is whether or not the United States and Communist China will come to a mutually agreeable trade agreement that is enforceable. And that's the key thing, is enforceability. And I think the earliest that'll happen is next year. So I think you should, when you're thinking recession, I'm not thinking recession, and let me make clear, I don't want the United States to go into recession. The United States economy is perfectly capable of growing at 4, 5, 6% real gross domestic product, GDP, provided you have the right economic policies. But who controls the House? The Democrats do. I bring it up because, in my mind, what is the biggest problem facing the United States today? Now, some will say the debt deficit or the debt, those are symptoms. You can't ignore those symptoms, but what are the symptoms of out-of-control government spending? And I've said that in numerous shows. And neither political party, certainly not the Democrats, and really certainly not the Republican Party, are really going to do anything about it. In other words, if Donald Trump, President Trump, had the ability to institute policies that would give us above-average economic growth, he would, but he can't. Why? Doesn't have the votes. You need the votes. Everything is votes in Congress, whereas it's the House or the Senate. Now, yes, the president can lead, but eventually you got to pass a bill. And you got to pass the bill both in the House and the Senate. So the Democrats are not going to pass any bill that would dramatically improve the chances of the United States economy to grow at 4, 5, 6%. In other words, both parties are going to continue to do what's causing the problem. We are stagnating. Note, I didn't say we're in a recession. I didn't say we're in a boom, but we're getting growth rates most likely that are going to be between 2 and 3%, barring any unforeseen, economists call them exogenous impacts, like a trade war, like not getting an agreement, or not only a trade agreement, but making progress with North Korea. And remember, we have sanctions not only on North Korea, but also the Islamic Republic of Iran. So there are a lot of things that could put the U.S. economy in a recession. Conversely, there are a lot of things that could put the U.S. economy in a booming situation, but they require political votes, and you have two political parties that simply are not addressing the number one economic problem facing the United States today, and that is federal government spending is out of control. And neither political party is up to the job. So in my mind, maybe the United States can grow at between 2 and 3%. I think that's optimistic if we're talking over 2, 3, 4 years. Remember, the key thing is we need economic growth, but it has to be consistent quarter after quarter after quarter. In other words, one good quarter does not make an economy. So there's a lot of uncertainty that could really increase, dramatically increase. And more, I think this is being somewhat overdone. The focus is on, well, can Trump and his U.S. trade representative come to a mutually acceptable trade agreement with the communist Chinese? Well, I think they could. Question is, will it really be enforceable? You see, up to now, all these negotiations have been done in private. I want you to think about it. How much of the detail, the specifics, do you know about what the U.S. has gotten in the negotiations and what the communist Chinese have gotten? We don't know. And it's important to point out, you have to get whatever agreement Trump and the U.S. trade agreement come up with has to go through Congress. For example, a lot less controversial agreement was made between United States, Canada, and Mexico. The USMC agreement is what they call it. It still has not been voted on in Congress, in the House. That needs to be done. But right now, what are the Democrats trying to do? They've changed the story from Trump colluded with the or conspired with Russians to now Trump is a racist. And they're even taking it further. Trump is a white nationalist or a white supremacist. And so are his supporters. Well, that's dividing the country. They're doing it because the Democrats, in my mind, don't have an agenda that is attractive to the American people. So what they're engaged in is a smear campaign, lying about your opponent, calling him a racist or a white supremacist. And then by extension, and this is where I think they make the biggest mistake, and they are making this mistake. Remember, Trump got over 60 million votes. And once his supporters, and I think a lot of supporters are already awake to this. Oh, you're calling me a racist? You have, I would dare say, of the 60 million plus that voted for Trump, maybe 1 or 2 million are racist. Maybe, and I mean with a big question mark. I think most Americans aren't racist. But that's not stopping in any way what I call the radical extremist Democrat socialists. They're making it up as they go. It's the technique of the big lie. So the more often they repeat it and repeat it, Trump's a racist, Trump's a racist, Trump's a racist. His supporters are racist, supporters are racist. They're going to get some of their own supporters, the Democrats, primarily blacks, hear that on the television news and agree with it. They don't challenge it. They're ignorant that Trump isn't. See, I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I couldn't vote for either one because both political parties today, Republican and Democrat, are big government parties. They have betrayed the American people, and they do that every day by putting the interest of illegal aliens that are in the United States, living and working, anywhere from 30 to 60 million. The American people have woken up to that. Democrats, Republicans, and independents, they don't like the fact that both political parties, mainly the Democratic Party, but the same is true of the Republican, are more concerned about getting citizenship for illegal aliens than in stopping the invasion and rolling the invasion back. And that's why we live in not only a very divisive country, but you're playing with fire here. Because when you accuse the supporters of this case, President Trump, of being racist, when I would say the overwhelming majority, upwards of 95% or more, are not, they might not have come out to vote for Trump a second time. But what is going to be their attitude? Well, if you're going to call me a racist or a white supremacist, and I know I'm not, I'm going to make sure I come out and vote no matter what. And not because they're for Trump, but because the Democratic Party have smeared not only Trump, but the American people, and show more concern for illegal aliens than the American people. They feel betrayed. The American people feel betrayed by the so-called establishment, the political establishment, the political elitist establishment of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. What's amazing about what the Democrats are doing, they are unambiguously revealing themselves. And not understanding that will have a major backlash. Oh, yes, you'll save some of the, I call them the true believers in your party. But many people that were Democrats for generations are going to say, well, if you're going to call me a racist and you're going to have more concern for illegal aliens than the American worker, well, I'm not going to vote for Democrats anymore. I'm certainly not going to vote for whoever the presidential candidate is. So they're not going to volunteer or wear a Trump hat, but in their minds is, I'm going to get even. I'm going to get even with the Democratic Party and their candidates. One final story, and I have to make this quick, and this relates to the trade with China. Taiwan, the other China. I lived in Taipei, Taiwan for a total of 5 years. So I've lived there. I don't speak Chinese, but I've lived there. They're a prosperous, growing country, although their growth rates have declined in recent years, and there's been somewhat of a brain drain. They have requested from the United States the sale of several weapon systems, and we already have approved tanks, missiles, a number of weapon systems. But it was announced that and you'll see more press on this, that the Trump administration, Trump has given the go-ahead to sell 66 F-16 Fighting Falcon fighters to Taiwan. And that's the latest version, the V version, the Viper version. That's a big sale, especially when you add it to what Taiwan has already requested. Now, this has to go through the House and the Senate, be approved, but our Department of State, Defense, has already approved. There'll probably be hearings on it, but we'll make the sale. Communist China is not happy. I'm not concerned whether Communist China is happy, because they've been screwing the American people for 20 to 30 years because their political elites, both in the Democrat and Republican Party, enabled them. See, in my mind right now, Trump is going to get reelected, and I think by a landslide of about 10 million. It's rather early to make that, but I'm looking at what the Democratic Party has become, what they stand for. They don't really have a candidate other than Joe Biden. He is an establishment Democrat. The rest, the American people are not going to vote for him. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to get millions of votes, but I think this time they're going to lose big time, because now Donald Trump has a record. He has results. So I cheer on the fact that Donald Trump finally has approved that sale to Taiwan. Communist Chinese do not like that. And they're sort of threatening us, but they have really nothing to do, unless they want war. Maybe they want war, but I don't think that's advisable, even for them. So I hope this goes through. I think it will. And stay tuned. We'll see whether or not the Communist Chinese finally decide to negotiate in good faith. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.